is Hyperspace Theology, exploring what we can know about life and faith and God Almighty through a galaxy far, far away.
Welcome to Hyperspace Theology, a show in which we're exploring theology through the lens of a galaxy far, far away. From belief to redemption, orthodoxy to resurrection, the Star Wars galaxy is jam-packed with theological themes, and we're going to crack them wide open. Hopefully this can be of help to you in your journey of faith, or hey, at the very least, maybe it can enhance your appreciation for the galaxy that we all know and love. I'm your host, Jared Mays. Joining me once again this week is Scott Howland. How are you, my friend? Cut any toes off this week with the lawnmower?
Nope. One benefit is my son does all the mowing now, so...
Oh, there we go. That's right.
Just a little bit of weed whack in or something like that. But no, everything's been good.
I think about you every single time I do yard work.
Hopefully you put on your safety shoes when you think about that.
It's when I get, whenever I start doing something dumb with my equipment, that's when I think about you. Like, remember the toe. Rick, who is joining us this week in the place of Dr. Kevin Burr, is probably wondering what we're talking about. This is, of course, our guest for this episode, my good friend from college, Rick Grace. How are you, Rick?
Hey, man, I'm good. I feel a little inadequate because there's no fancy letters before my name, but if you want to call me Grand Admiral, I'm cool with that.
Grand Admiral, yeah. It's like I always introduce Dr. Kevin Burr and Scott Howland. I don't know.
I'm used to the inadequacy, so.
It's all good.
What was fun, Rick, was as I was talking to you about coming on the show, you were talking about Kevin's PhD and how did you describe your position? Tell us a little bit about yourself. What was the language that you used? It was something about how all you do is like eat junk food and play video games.
Oh yeah, man. That's the bread and butter of youth ministry right there. Everyone just, you know, they take us as a stepping stone to other ministries, so we assume that all we do is just hang out with teenagers, play games, eat junk food. And most of that's correct, but there is some Jesus in there. So, you know, we're doing our best.
Oh, that's awesome. Of course, Rick and I are good friends from college. Both graduated from Harding University. Coming up on 10 years, we're getting there. Rick, tell us a little bit about who you are, other than, you know, you're a youth minister, but like your faith and your passion for Star Wars. Tell us who you are besides the junk food.
Yeah, absolutely. So... and you can cut me off if I'm going too long or tell me to elaborate more either way. But, so I grew up in Nashville, Hendersonville, Tennessee, and, went to Harding and kind of been moving my way west. So now I am in rural Northeast Texas. some great people out there. Been a youth minister full time for, this is my seventh summer. So 6 full years and then some change. And, good times. As far as faith, man, I'm a preacher's grandson.
That's
kinda cool.
I forgot that.
Yeah. But then I also had some different denominational experiences. As a teenager, I went to a mega Baptist church, and where I grew up, mega churches were the norm. So if had fewer than like 300, I was like, wow, those exist somewhere? You know, it was crazy because everything was a mega church for me. And, you know, that was a big part of my identity, was being around church. Church was great. And so by like 8th grade, I knew that I wanted to pursue ministry. And by 11th grade, started dating my wife, and she actually brought me back to the Church of Christ. Fun story.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And then that's kind of solidified Harding as my choice. That's where she wanted to go. I'm actually a 3-generation Harding student.
Oh, really?
And it was like, wow. Yeah, I was like, I'm definitely not going to Harding. But that was the one school my wife wanted to go to. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to Harding. So that was fun.
My parents actually went to Harding's greatest rival, Arkansas Tech.
Nice.
And so yeah, I landed at the school that Harding, that Tech loves to hate the most. But continue.
Yeah, no, let's see, Star Wars, I have pretty clear memories of watching the original trilogy on VHS with my dad, but I was never that super into it. I was like, I didn't get it, you know, I just was watching, but like, okay, whatever. But I remember when Episode 1 came out, it was the first time I saw lines of people wrapped around the theater, and so whoa, this is, you know, something to this, and so, really got into him then. Confession time, I absolutely loved Jar Jar Binks. He was my on-ramp into Star Wars. It was like, you know, we can look back and shake our heads, but for me, I was like, that guy's so cool. You know, like, I
want to thank Rick for joining us this week and and wish him the best.
Right? And so that hasn't aged well, but it's part of my story, I guess. But yeah, so like growing up, I didn't know much about the extended universe. I had a couple of like picture books or reference books, but that was about it. Now in high school and college, I got into a big like sci-fi phase.
Right.
And I actually, like the first 2 or 3 years of college, I watched all of the Star Trek and Stargate shows back when Netflix was like calling a DVD to come to your mailbox.
Oh, yeah, the queue.
That's right. Good stuff. And, you know, I like to believe in the holy sci-fi trinity of Star Trek, Star Wars, and Stargate. You got to throw that in there.
I've never heard that before.
I made it up. It's totally me. And then one day in Searcy, I was book thrifting. You know, my wife's a teacher, and so she was getting books for her classroom, and I was actually there looking for Star Trek books, and I saw a whole row of Star Wars books.
Yeah.
And I left them on the shelf. But then I was like, man, I should go back and get those. So I finally went back, and I got, like, picked up, like, the Thrawn trilogy and several other Legends books. Well, they're Legends now. I don't think they were at the time. And then eventually, do you remember... I used to have your tweets texted to me, and I didn't know how to turn it off. Yeah, and so anytime you would tweet, Jared, it would go straight to my phone.
I'm so sorry. And
no,
other person who did that was my father-in-law. So if I ever tweeted anything inappropriate, he could tell me to take it down.
That's funny. I think one time I actually like tweeted a message that I was trying to text to Jessica because I had it set up, you know, where you just text Twitter. And so, man, that Twitter text business got me in trouble.
That's
a lot.
Hilarious. Oh, my goodness.
But anyway, that being said, I saw your tweet that said something about, you know, you sharing your love for Star Wars books. And so I reached out, and you've been a huge help to kind of get me started reading in a lot of the expanded universe. So thank you, Jared. That's awesome,
funny.
Man. And that's part of my story.
Yeah, all because of the text-to-tweet thing.
That's
great.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. I broke out into a sweat just now as soon as you said that, thinking about every dumb thing that I put out on the internet being texted to somebody's phone. That's great. Well, Rick, of course, has been a listener on Hyperspace Theology and did the cool thing that other listeners, y'all could do. Rick is not unique in this. Yeah, we're friends from college, but you don't have to be a friend of mine from college to reach out and say, I've got a topic and I want to talk about this. And we can work it out. Of course, Rick also happens to have a nice microphone, which worked out well. But you had an idea and you wanted to talk about this notion of cutting yourself off from the Force. And how this relates to self-induced spiritual drought. And I didn't even finish reading the idea and was like, let's do it. That's awesome. I love that. Because there's a couple of really cool stories in which that happens in the expanded universe that I'm dying to talk about. But first I want to ask, this is a kind of off-the-wall topic, Rick. This is not as easy as redemption, right? You know, the greatest theological theme in all of Star Wars. How in the world did you arrive at this as your topic idea?
Well, honestly, it is kind of my experiences. Ministry is great, but it can be hard. And, you know, a lot of things that go with it. And life's hard, too. And so...
Right, for everybody, not just... Right, and that's one of the things I've got to remember. Whenever things aren't going well is... Life is hard. It's not just that people's jobs are hard, right? Life is hard.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But so, I know what you mean.
Yeah, so I guess this is going to get kind of heavy, kind of quick. I make inappropriate jokes, so I'm probably going to say something stupid, just a forewarning. But that's my way of coping with some of the difficult stuff. So yeah, real quick, my wife and I have been married. Actually, okay, this is one of those fun facts. Jared, when's my anniversary?
Your anniversary? I should know this, because you asked me. I know when my anniversary is.
I was just going to ask, do you know your own anniversary?
I know when Scott's anniversary is because, I run the directory app, so I've got that at my fingertips. Your directory, your anniversary, I don't know. I'm sorry.
You're good. I have a weird memory, and I remember that y'all got married 1 week before us.
Oh, 1 week. That's hilarious.
Yeah, because y'all are May 12th, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm May 19th. Yeah. I'd be really embarrassed if it wasn't you and I just had this strange fun fact that didn't even match up to the person. But yeah, so yeah,
so
May 19th, 2012. Woohoo, good times. And but yo, so I've been married for, what is it, 9 and some change years now. And Yeah, so pretty early on in our marriage, we kind of discovered that we were going to have a longer path getting pregnant than we anticipated. And so that journey of infertility was kind of harsh. I know Jessica was really sad and upset and angry at God, and I was angry because she was angry, you know, and didn't have anywhere really to put all those emotions. And and then we finally did get pregnant. We were pregnant with twins.
Right.
And early in the pregnancy, we lost one of the twins. That was a super hard day and experience. And it's really hard to kind of grieve one while still celebrating the surviving baby.
Right.
And so that was a huge kind of hurdle where our faith was, you know, things were being thrown at us and we didn't weather that storm as well as we should have. We definitely have learned from it, grown from it, and have a lot to share from it. But I think, you know, we kind of, you know, it took some spiritual health, I guess, from us, if that's a saying.
You've got scars that came from it, and there's no way around that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just being a parent, you know, it's ironic. The thing we wanted so much end up becoming a giant stressor that having kids now, which they're a great blessing, and our hearts go out for those who still struggle with infertility. It's, you know, it's a crazy struggle. But now as parents, it's a whole new world of a different kind of struggles. And finances get tough. They kind of come and go. And ministry, man, relationships are hard. You're isolated. Everyone treats you different because you're a minister or a pastor or whatever. And so, and as a youth minister, man, it's a rolling cycle of relationships. You pour out your heart to students, but you really, you know, you got to treat them as children, not adults half the time. Like, you know, because they're legally children, but also every 6-7 years they graduate, move on. And so you're constantly kind of resetting and rebuilding, your relationships. Man, we could talk more about other things that have gone on. You know, I've had some church ministry interviews that have crashed and burned and left some scars, and you know, just trying to be a minister, trying to figure out what does success look like, and just spending days wondering, am I doing any good? Is any of this worth it? All of that. And so the past few years I've just been in a funk, and you know, truth is, my, you know, my personal disciplines haven't been what they have been in healthier spaces, and so, man, there's just been a lot where I'm like, I'm not pursuing God the way that I had in the past. And so as I'm consuming all of this Star Wars content, I'm like, man, this is a thing that a lot of usually Jedi, I guess, go through, where they find themselves, for a lot of different reasons we'll talk about, just pulling themselves away from the Force.
Yeah,
and
maybe disillusioned.
Yeah, something like that. And so I've kind of had some experiences. Of course, not the same. I don't have the Force, but my relationship with Christ has suffered. We might talk about this later, but have you heard of the word acedia?
That's a no for me. You, Scott?
Okay, I just learned it, so I'm not super smart. I'm not the Dr. Kevin Burr. I bet he knows the word. But no, I read this in a Christianity Today article that was for ministers and pastors. But basically, it's like sadness at an interior or spiritual good. And basically, it's like you just don't find joy in doing the good that you should or want to do. And it's, you know, something that affects those who, well, every Christian, really, but especially ministers. And a great article that kind of defined what I've been feeling. Just I read this past week. So I'm kind of still raw and working through some of this. So that kind of brought up the topic for me. That was a long answer for your question.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for being transparent and vulnerable. I know we've got a number of listeners who have gotten to a point in their faith where they're no longer attending church. People who grew up in the church and for whatever reason have been thrown off the path, but are still interested in spiritual things and are grateful to have the opportunity to think about this from a Star Wars perspective, which is a lot easier to access. It's a fictional universe. Your ability to consume it or not consume it does not, you know, land you in eternal punishment or eternal life. And so it is in some ways a good entry point for some really tough topics. And as we talk about this, I'll share a little bit about struggles I've had as well. So you're not in this alone. Rick, thank you for being vulnerable and open about this particular topic. And We'll take the load off you for a second, and let's talk about first and foremost how we see this in Star Wars. So let's think about what it looks like in the Star Wars galaxy for a person to feel disillusioned with the Force, to maybe fall off the path of the Jedi way, or the path of orthodoxy, might be what we see more commonly. Do you think that's true, Scott? A Jedi feeling like the Jedi way may not be the only path to the Force. That's probably more common than cutting oneself off from the ability to feel the Force, don't you think?
That seems to be more appropriate, that a lot of them, you know, as they've gone, some of the teachings may have not hit home. You see some people tend to go away from maybe the light side into more of that gray Jedi, where they take a different tact of it.
Sure.
Obviously, the two biggest isolations I could think of, and I'm not even sure if one of them is a true isolation, is you know, Luke, and then I can't even think of his name now. Oh my goodness! I can think of Ezra's master there, Kanan. That's it.
Kanan. Yeah.
I could totally picture him, but you know, his exile for protective reasons, you know, to trying to evade the Empire as they search out all the Jedi. As they hunt them down, but so I think there's different reasons why different people would take attack. Like obviously, Kanan's absence from the Force is different than Luke's, and then you know some of the other ones that move away from being a strictly light side or that perspective have, you know, I lost my complete thought now.
No, you're there. Let's talk about Kanan first. Let's tackle these one at a time. These are really good examples because they're different from one another, but they do have some commonality. So, Rick, have you watched all of Rebels? You know what we're talking about?
Oh, yeah,
okay.
Definitely.
All right, just making sure. If not, we're going to boot you from the
call. That gets some booted, but not Jar Jar.
I'm not the biggest...
Second strike.
I'm not the big... Listen, I'm the same age as Rick. I grew up thinking Jar Jar was funny. I got to tell you, the amount of times I would pretend that my tongue had gotten stuck in the turbine between the pods, you know, I've done it a lot. All right. I'm not going to lie. But I do want to talk about Kanan's example as somebody who experienced tragedy. Think about the perspective of a Jedi, a young Jedi, an adolescent Jedi, a teenager, you know, like, yeah, what is he, 12, like 13 years old? Not so different from the kids you work with, Rick, at a very vulnerable age where you're feeling all these big feelings, your body's changing, the way your brain is functioning is changing. Oh, yeah, and on top of that, by the way, you've got superhuman capabilities at at empathy and perceiving other people's feelings and emotions. And then in the middle of all that, the network that you're connected to spiritually as well as psychologically is totally cut off, and you feel the pain of all the Jedi, every person you've ever known and loved, dying on the same day, for the most part. That's going to have drastic consequences. Obviously, we see in A New Hope where Obi-Wan feels the death of Alderaan when that planet is destroyed, and it's not something that's explored a whole lot outside of that, that when there is a massive galactic tragedy, Jedi can feel that through the Force. They know that something horrible has happened. It's like a knife in the gut to old Alec Guinness there on either that or he had some indigestion.
You can see that in Revenge of the Sith when Order 66 hits and
oh, sure, yeah.
Yoda's, you know, for lack of a better term, takes a knee as he, you know, clutching his chest as he feels all these life forms being snuffed out.
Yeah, so let's talk about that psychological impact that might have on an adolescent to feel the death of your master. How does that change your connection to spirituality, to the Force, to what everything you've ever been taught and known and loved, and that's cut off from you? I mean, it only makes logical sense that, of course, you're not going to recover from that in a week or a month or a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
How?
For sure.
Go ahead.
So yeah, something I'm connecting with too is, you know, another element of that is a Jedi Padawan, their parents are not in the picture. You know, their parents essentially are their master.
Right.
And so what we would look to for our support systems, especially at that age, would be our friends and our parents. And yeah, for someone like Kanan who survives Order 66, everything is ripped away from them, all of their support. So yeah, that's definitely, man, that's harsh.
We're going to talk about what it's like to experience doubt and tragedy and pain and exile. But I don't want to leave us there. I want to make sure in each one of these examples, we also talk about how we see the story of, in most of these cases, how a person comes back, how they are able to rebound. And hopefully for us, we can think about what it's like to try to have a lifeline when we experience a spiritual void in our lives. Scott, what is it for Kanan, do you think, that is the open door for him to experience the Force again and get back on the path of the Jedi way?
It's Ezra reawakening those abilities in his sense of maybe duty to help out another, to guide another Force user that hasn't really approached him before. And maybe also him being in part of the rebellion, as it were, with all of his friends, and try and protect them as well. You know, like maybe he found that calling again in duty, if you will.
Sure. So there's something, there's people to fight for. He's got family. You have the people, it's the relationships that keep you tethered to who you are and what you love. And there's also this this cause to believe in, something to fight for, something to fight against. Sometimes you need divine anger. There's a book that I read. What is it called? I'll look it up. It's about having something you're so passionate about that you have to do something about it. Divine, holy discontent, I think was the name of it.
Sounds familiar.
The idea of having something that you cannot stand to continue the way that it is unless you get involved. And so I think that God can use that, certainly uses it. In Moses, for example, Moses, who is so upset over the way that his people are treated, that God says, I'm going to use that. You were just going to use it to murder one person. Let's use it instead in a more productive way, right?
I was wondering where you're going to connect that. I was expecting the murder, but we didn't get there. So
No. So I think Koenig's example is a good one in that we see a few different redemptive elements in that. And eventually was it season four? He's finally knighted he's finally made it as a Jedi Knight. Knighted through a dream? Or it's murky.
It's a vision in the Force. Okay. It's a temple connection, right? So he's at a temple, wasn't he?
Yeah. Anyway, Kevin was watched that most recently. He can pitch in next week. He's probably screaming at us from his car as he listens to this. So you mentioned one other example, Scott, I think was my primary example that I thought of with this. Examples of people in Star Wars who have experienced a spiritual drought, or more specifically, have cut themselves off from the Force, which is even darker and scarier to think about than experiencing doubt. Like, everything I believe may not be what I thought it was. But to cut yourself off from the Force, to no longer feel the connection to all living beings. That, I think, is most clearly in at least the mainline films, in Luke, in The Last Jedi. Don't you think that's right, Scott?
Yes. Yeah, that's where it's explored the most. When this topic was brought up, that was the first thing I thought of was how he had just wanted to, how he experienced that loss of Kylo and all of his other students, but all those, that giant loss. And he's just like, okay, I just can't do this anymore. That's kind of the vibe I always got from that.
Yeah, you want to weigh in on this one, Rick? How does that experience relate to your own?
Oh, man. So, Luke definitely went hardcore on, like you said, just cold stop on the Force there. And as far as my own experiences, thankfully I've not been there. You know, I haven't gotten to the place where I've walked away from faith or, given up.
You haven't secluded yourself to a deserted island full of puffins? That's good.
Yeah, right. Not yet. I've thought about it. I did go to Ireland and think about hijacking a boat to go up there. But
that'd be cool. One day.
Yeah. But no, man. I think I got a thought. I promise it's coming. My brain's still catching up with my excitement, though.
One of the things about this that stands out to me is Luke's disillusionment with the Jedi Order and how woke he thinks he is in The Last Jedi when he talks about how the Jedi were under the thumb of Darth Sidious. There was the Chancellor the whole time. That's not a great impression, I know. He's so whiny and petulant to Rey that for us, as the viewer, we watch this. We've seen the movies. We know what he's talking about. He's technically right, but his anger toward it is so wrong, right? And that's a really telling experience that I've seen, and sometimes have experienced myself, but for the most part have seen in other friends who have suffered disillusionment with the church or with God, and they felt like, how can you be a Christian when all of these things are true? Yes, you might have the facts, but, well, there's a reason. There's a reason that we believe, and it goes beyond the failings of the church. It goes beyond the ways that we've been let down and disappointed. We've got something to believe in. Rick, do you relate to Luke's disillusionment with the Jedi Order?
I think he was.
Are you calling me whiny, first of all?
I'm just trying to give you a lifeline when you stalled out on your answer a second ago.
You totally got me distracted, though, by thinking about, wait a minute, Luke has progressed as a character, but he's always been whiny. You know, I'll keep thinking back to, I wanted to go to Tosche Station to pick up some power converters. That was even worse than yours. But
It's a Skywalker trait, actually.
Maybe so.
But anyway, so yeah, disillusionment with the church. That's a loaded question. Depends on the day, you know? I know that I'm sure there are people disillusioned with me and my participation with the church. And so I don't know if it's fair for me to say that the church as a whole. There's been times that I've been upset by individuals, and there's pain from relationships for sure. That definitely contributes to it for sure. It's a good question.
It's one of the things that I love about Luke's story in The Last Jedi. And I like the way you said that, Rick. It's not just that he was disillusioned with the Jedi Order. From a technical standpoint, the Jedi thinking they had cornered the market on the Force was not the right way to go. Nevertheless, his attitude is what needs to change more than the Jedi Order in that movie. The galaxy needs him to step up and participate and get involved and shape up and be a man and step up to the plate and do the thing you don't want to do because you're needed. Not necessarily to have all the right facts and get everything straight. One of the things I love about that is he eventually realizes I need to set my ego aside. And for him, it takes Yoda stepping in to say, it's not about the Jedi, it's not about the texts. Ultimately, there's more to this than the right and wrong, the facts of how you messed up and how other people have disappointed you. Scott, we've talked about Luke from The Last Jedi here. This was one of the examples that you gave. Did you have more to add on this?
Part of what I was, as you guys were talking about, the part of what I was thinking of is, could some of this disillusionment he had that led to his isolation be the fact that he really lacked any kind of leadership? He only had Obi-Wan for a very brief period of time to really instruct him on the Force. And then all the mantle of saving the Jedi Order, and then he only had a small period of time with Yoda, so he really didn't have a really good rudder, if you will, to steer him down these rivers of doubt, and you know, help him along the way. You know, do you think sometimes, because I could say that when you know I experienced loss when my father passed, and I didn't really have a strong spiritual leader in my life at that point, so it was really easy to just throw my hands up and go, okay, I don't know what to think. I don't know what to do. I can't reconcile, losing my father at that point, and so maybe it's just a lack of leadership that he had or father figure, if you will.
I love that. It's a great point. I think that's absolutely true. Luke is catapulted, both in canon and legends, Luke is catapulted into leading the Jedi Order, training a new generation of Jedi when he wasn't necessarily ready for it. And I think that in a lot of ways that is often the pain of going into full-time ministry right out of college, right out of seminary, is you might have the academic maturity to be able to teach the Bible, but then the emotional and spiritual maturity to handle leadership of people's souls when you've experienced real suffering and pain and loss and sorrow for the first time. I think there's a lot to that. Do you think that's true, Rick?
Yeah, for sure. Amanda's thinking about ministry and ministers. Talking about youth ministers and, well, you know, my world is dealing with teenagers.
Yeah.
Even for them, just graduating high school and being launched into the adult world. Yeah, I mean, they've been taught a lot, you know, throughout their lives. But once you start being on your own, that's really when I think faith is given its first real opportunity to be tested. And I think that's what a lot of this kind of comes down to. You know, kind of been brainstorming about the different characters I've seen this with, and a lot of it comes down to, you know, how they respond to something traumatic, as we kind of already hit on. But yeah, it's all about, I think, that faith, and like you said, are they ready? Does it matter, ready or not, here it comes, and so how do you handle that?
Yeah, definitely. I love that. Yeah, it's not just unique to ministers. I'm glad you pointed that out. Being catapulted into the adult world obviously means that there's a lot of adjustments that happen. And I think Scott's making a great point, which is don't be afraid to turn to people who have walked this path before you. It's one of the things that I love about church, was just preaching this on Sunday, that chances are, whatever you are going through, somebody has gone through that before you. When my mother died 5 years ago, I felt so lost and hopeless, and then had a friend and a mentor come alongside me who had experienced horrible tragedy as well, and he said, here's what it looked like for me, and here's the book that I read that really made a huge difference in my life, and that was the absolute turning point in coming back to God on my journey of faith, was somebody to come alongside me who said, I know what you're going through. I've been through this. This is what helped me. Even if it doesn't help you, I'm here for you. Read this book and let's talk about it. And I'm grateful that he had the wisdom and the courage to step out there and do that. And so I think that's one of the good takeaways in this discussion, is find yourself an anchor. If you are floating around in the tether of the void of not knowing what to believe or feeling like there is nothing to believe, find somebody who does feel like they know what they're talking about. Somebody who believes in something, is committed, somebody who has survived whatever experience you're going through. I would say particularly somebody in the church, but, you know, hey, I realize we've got a broader listenership than that. Find somebody who can be there for you and can help keep you tethered to who you are at the very least. We've talked about Kanan. We've talked about Luke. Are there any other characters in Star Wars, Rick, that might have experienced something like this, some kind of a self-induced spiritual drought?
I was thinking about this. And there's a few other characters. I know, I've been reading the High Republic stuff, so there's some characters there that you might see a shadow of that. Another big example, another Order 66 survivor, Cal Kestis from Jedi Fallen Order. You know, he had the same thing, had to survive, and so he kind of just went off the grid, kept himself isolated, and really the whole point of the game is him reconnecting with the Force. And, you know, spending time to, it's literally the whole game component is trying to find his Force abilities and reconnect.
It works really well in a video game as a storytelling mechanic,
yes,
which is right. I've lost my ability to use the Force. I've got to discover it in stages. And my example, like, is also from a video game from Knights of the Old Republic 2, mm-hmm. The Exile. It has a similar story there of you've got to progress and discover Force abilities. And it's almost cheesy to think about, but there is spiritual depth to it as a storytelling component, not just as a video game mechanic.
Yeah.
So Cal Kestis.
Cal Kestis, and then the same game, was it Seer? I can't ever say her name. His friend he meets in the game who is a Jedi. And, you know, her story's kind of darker because she lost her Padawan, kind of abandoned her, and had that whole betrayal there. And that kind of was, I think, some of the same things. She was afraid to let herself really get back into the Force. And so she was an example and kind of a tragic one, you know. But like I said, reading The High Republic, I'm worried about Elzar Mann. Have you been reading and following up?
So I gave Scott a copy of Light of the Jedi. We'll see if he gets it finished.
Uh-huh.
Okay, good. Yeah,
I have been reading it, yes.
Where are you going with this?
Yeah. So in Rising Storm, there were some moments. I won't spoil things for those who are still reading. It's kind of a new book, so I won't say too much. But there are some moments when he is pretty desperate, and He makes some choices that are questionable for a Jedi. Well, actually, he makes several choices that are questionable for a Jedi in that book. But anyway, there's some that relate to his relationship with the Force and, you know, where he draws his power from. And I can see him being afraid of some of his choices and kind of running from the Force. Similarly, I'm reading...
In Legends, there's a character, Jason Solo, who experiences something similar where as the galaxy plummets into war, he, you know, is Han and Leia's oldest son in Legends. In the Expanded Universe, Jason intentionally stops using the Force so that he can become more self-reliant. He also doesn't want to... I don't remember. There's a philosophical debate between him and his brother. It's been 10 years. I read these in college, Rick. I was buying them for $2.99 used at Hastings whenever I could, whenever I was ready for the next book. All right, so that's my example. What was yours?
So, yeah, I've been reading Out of the Shadows, and Vernestra Rowe, it's very minor, but I've just been picking up on it, and she has this something to do with some visions she receives while she's traveling in hyperspace.
Yeah.
And I'm not through the book, so I'm sure they're going to explore this more, but kind of as I'm reading it, it's like, you know, she holds back. She doesn't really allow herself, she doesn't trust the Force. And so I think that kind of is a theme that kind of crosses over to Faith.
Yeah.
You know, you might be surrounded and saturated in faith, but still not fully trusting, you know, the system you're working in, the faith system you're working in.
Yeah. Oh, that's a beautiful point. I like that, to be surrounded by people who believe, but to not be there yourself. We talked about this on our episode about doubt. I think Thomas is a good example biblically for somebody who's in a similar position at the end of John's gospel, where he is surrounded by believers, the other disciples. They're gung-ho. They've seen the resurrected Jesus, and he says, not so fast. But what I do like about that is Thomas is at least surrounded by believers. He's at least put himself in his community, because your community can keep you anchored. Your community can keep you tethered. What are some other examples of what this might look like biblically, to cut yourself off from God? Scott, do you have any that can come to mind? I've listed a couple here. I've got an Old Testament example and a New Testament example. I wonder if we're on the same wavelength, though. Obviously, to experience doubt is one thing. We're talking about a different level here, though, to intentionally cut yourself off from faith.
Like you said, Thomas was at least seemed to be making an effort to try and connect, even if he couldn't. I can't think of somebody who was just like, nope, that's it. I'm just completely out. Get away from me. I want nothing to do with it.
Let me give an example, and we'll see if this connects. What about Job? So I just took a class on wisdom literature, and so we spent a third of our class studying Job. Job is a good example in the sense that everything he believed seems to be been pulled out from under him. And in his way of understanding God, which his view of God is challenged throughout the book, for him to be suffering as much as he is a sign that God has turned against him. And so throughout the book, he's saying, well, I haven't done anything. And his friends are saying, yeah, you have. Surely, right, Job? Didn't you, weren't you mean to that homeless guy that one time? And he's like, no, I'm nice to homeless people. Ask anybody. I'm notoriously really nice to homeless people. And there's this whole list of social injustices that come up in Job 22. And throughout the book, Job keeps defending himself to say, those are not what's wrong with me. I think that God has turned against me. There's got to be a reason. I need to know the reason. And so for Job, he is experiencing so much tragedy that it's eclipsed his ability to connect with God. As God is working on a different timetable. God, of course, is going to give Job the chance. God is looking to see if Job will remain faithful. Do you think the story of Job connects at all on this topic?
To me, it doesn't seem like the self-imposed isolation that
it's not quite the same
from Luke.
It's not quite the same.
It doesn't seem to be, it still seems like he's still trying. He's still making that effort.
Yeah, so maybe if he had taken his wife's advice, what is it, in chapter 2, curse God and die, then maybe we'd be talking about the same story. What do you think, Rick? Does Job connect at all?
Yeah, that seems to be a little more
down
that path.
So, man, Job, I think, is it maybe relates in the sense that he does what we should do when we're on that path, because everything is thrown at him. He does get all of these circumstances that would make somebody bitter, that would make somebody doubt their faith. And so maybe what we learn from Job is the good example of what we should do when we are experiencing those struggles. You know, instead of cursing God and dying, instead of looking for another God to answer our problems, you know, he remains faithful, and he, even through so much pressure, he still looks to God as faithful and won't curse God and die. So maybe that's the point as far as how it connects with this question tonight.
One of the things I love about Job's story in all of this is at the end of the book, he comes to God with this accusation, with this lawsuit, saying, give me the chance, please, to defend myself. I've got a case against you. I've done nothing wrong, and I'm suffering here. And then God spends three chapters berating Job. And we could debate, you know, all night. The tone of God's speeches in Job 38 through 41. Is God belligerent? Is God angry? Or is God just like a teacher setting him straight? The fact of the matter is, he frames Job's suffering in the context of the greater cosmos, right? In the sense of all of creation and God's role as the creator and sustainer and redeemer of all creation, and helps Job to see you are just one man. Your universe revolves around you, and instead you need to understand that the universe works because I've created it. And you play a small, insignificant role in all of creation, and you've made yourself so incredibly self-important. I think that that's often the problem with the Jedi, is that they think that the whole world revolves around them. They become the center of their own world rather than thinking about the people that they serve. They can become so self-absorbed that they neglect the cause to which they're fighting for, and of course can become prideful and arrogant, kind of the excesses of the prequel era Jedi that Luke is so mad about in The Last Jedi. One of the things I love about Job is, if you're suffering and doubting or even isolated, one of the good lessons in that book is pay attention to God's larger creation and find your place within the creation. Go for a walk through the woods and notice that, hey, the world is still a good, beautiful place. God is still good. He's created all of this for our good pleasure, and the world does not revolve around us. Go up to a cliff, go up to a bluff, and overlook the highest point near where you live, and notice the fact that you are just one person among... Well, you don't have any high points there in Texas, Rick?
Well, we don't, but I'm thinking if you're in a really dark spot, maybe going up to a high spot is not a good idea.
Don't go to a cliff. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so the point there is, take in the creation. Watch Planet Earth. Maybe that's easier. Turn on Planet Earth, and from the safety of your own living room, surrounded by the people that you love. Thank you, Rick. And take in the fact that you are just a person who lives a life for a numbered number of days. The question then is, how are you going to live your life? And you can take stock of those little blessings. There's a lot to be thankful for. One of the most beautiful verses in the entire book is this. And this, for me, in my suffering, in my grief, in my doubt, is one of the key concepts that helped anchor me, is Job 121. Naked I came from my mother's womb, naked I shall return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And I think the problem there is, most of us, when we're experiencing tragedy, we're experiencing suffering, we will pay attention only to the second part of God's agency there. The Lord has taken away, therefore I'm mad. I don't want anything to do with God. God doesn't want anything to do with me. We need to understand the fact that God takes away, but God also gives. And there's this great cosmic balance. And unfortunately, I think in Western worldview, in American worldview, we think that the world revolves around us. And a biblical perspective is to understand that there's more to the world than your happiness. There's more to the world than feeling good. There's something to believe in. You know, Canaan in Rebels certainly is not just pursuing his own happiness. It's a rough walk, man. They don't have it easy. But he comes to believe, I've got something that I can do. I've got a larger cause in which I can participate. All right, I'm starting to preach, Rick. Save me here.
You're good.
Do you think I'm on the right track here?
Yeah, man. You had a lot of good stuff there. I was about to start raising my hand or giving you some amens or something to get your attention as a preacher.
Sure.
Just
you got any other examples?
Yeah. So this is, again, going to a dark place, but in the Bible, Judas, you know, he also was surrounded by support, but he took his, you know, his own shame and maybe guilt. I don't know exactly what emotions he was feeling. I'm speculating here to an extent, but, and, you know, he took his own life. And so he cut himself off from his faith in a undoable,
yeah,
you know, way. And so, again, another tragic example. And, you know, as, again, a youth minister, we've dealt with a couple suicides within the past few years, and I have students who are heavily struggling with that. So mm-hmm. just want to take this point and say, hey, nobody's alone. If you're listening to this podcast, you have friends, you have people who care for you, and that's yeah. definitely not the route for anybody.
Don't be afraid to reach out. The beautiful thing yeah. about Judas's story is it's not so different from Peter's. One's a betrayer, one's a denier. What's the difference, really?
Mm-hmm.
And Peter's story is redemptive. Peter allows, he has breakfast with Jesus, the breakfast of fish. What a breakfast there in John 21, where, of course, Jesus gives Peter a purpose. He says, feed my sheep, right? You've got a job to do. Peter, do you love me? All right, don't forget why you were in this in the first place. And secondly, you've got work to do. I've got a job for you. One of the best things you can do if you are struggling with your faith, if you find yourself wondering, is there a spiritual purpose in my life, is to get to work. Find something that you can do for the kingdom, and I think you'll find meaning in that. Mm-hmm. That might be where you find God, is not just in the asking these big philosophical questions, but getting your hands dirty and serving people the way that Jesus yeah. calls us to. I love that example. Yeah, Judas and Peter, kind of as a dichotomy and a contrast
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
Any other examples before we wind down the show for tonight? We've talked about Job, we've talked about Judas. I feel like we need one more that starts with a J, don't we?
Jesus.
There it is. Well, honestly, that's not bad.
Yeah, I know.
On the cross, good,
right?
On the cross, Jesus says, my God, why have you forsaken me?
Mm-hmm.
And we could spend all night debating.
I know, yeah.
The interpretation
these are loaded,
on that first.
Loaded themes.
Scott, you might remember from my Mark class, I gave 8 different theories on the cry of dereliction. Can you rattle off all 8? I can't.
No.
Well.
You were assuming I was awake for all this.
I know your teenagers weren't, but you probably were. Now, the point there is, of course, there was resurrection even after mm-hmm. exile. And I think the case is true for us as well. There is no far that's too far from which to come back, as we talked about last episode. And that's what I love about the prodigal son story, my last example, Luke 15. The son who cuts himself off from his family, cuts himself off mm-hmm. from his father, says, give me my money. I wish you were dead. I would rather have your money than this relationship. He wanders off. And, of course, at the end of that story, he comes back to the father. And before he can even finish his repentance speech, while he's still a long way off, the father gets up and runs and embraces him and throws a party. And that's the beauty in all of this, is that if you feel like there is nothing left to believe in, what I love about that story is even when the son didn't know it, the father was sitting and waiting for him to return. Even when the son had no idea that the father was even thinking about him, the father was still sitting and waiting for his return. It's a beautiful image to think about. As Jesus, hey, Jesus, let's say this one good thing about him. Good storyteller, that Jesus. Good preacher. And, of course, our Savior as well. Well, one of the things I'm hoping we can get to in this episode is how a person can be restored from a spiritual valley and renew their relationship with God. We've talked about being anchored to your community of faith. We've talked about surrounding yourself with spiritual mentors, reaching out to somebody if you find yourself in a situation in which you feel like the rug's been pulled out from under you. We've talked about framing your suffering in the context of the larger creation. What else would be some good advice that we can give for a person who feels cut off from spirituality, cut off from God, cut off from the force, if you will? Where do you go? What's a one practical strategy they can take? Rick?
I think I worded a couple of those a little bit differently as I was preparing. But yeah, so this is a very Star Wars-y word, but hope, you know, hope even when it's difficult. It's not exclusive to Star Wars. Of course, it's a Christian word too, but I think that's something I've been kind of chewing on, is that even when it's difficult, even when you don't believe, you don't want to believe, just have hope. Still hang on to that faith. It's kind of like you said with having an anchor and just kind of getting your hands dirty and getting back to work. That's where that hope comes in for me. Something else I'll throw out, again, just since a lot of this, for me at least, came up from my own experience. When you look at the Star Wars characters, a lot of them had a traumatic event that triggered this for them. And in my life, I've had some grief, some seasons where things weren't going well, for sure. But I also know that, like I said, there have been some seasons where my own habits haven't been productive for faith.
Yeah, right.
You know? And so I think maybe taking a real look at your own habits and just not being afraid to not beat yourself up with guilt, but just say, you know, I can do some things to help myself grow closer to God. I don't think God leaves us. I think we're the ones who give the distance. We're the ones who put the distance. And so taking a look at our own habits and saying, hey, you know, I need to bring myself closer to God.
That's excellent. I love that.
One more thing, if I can. I just was thinking about this as well. You know, the classic Star Wars mantra of, we all know where suffering goes. We're suffering, what suffering leads to, right? Yeah, in Star Wars. But, you know, that's not the same. And a Christian faith, suffering can be redeemed by God's greater narrative.
Oh, yeah, this is good stuff. We might need a whole episode on this. Yoda's little speech that hate leads to suffering. We don't have Kevin here to do his Yoda impression. When I don't want it, he gives it. And when I want it, he's not here. Oh, my gosh. All right, keep going with this. I love it. It's great.
Well, that's actually all I got. So,
suffering is not a dead-end street. In a Christian perspective, it does not lead to the dark side. It can lead to the dark side, but once you've started down that dark path, there is a way back. That's good. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you, Scott?
Sometimes it's necessary.
Sure. Mm.
Sometimes it's necessary to walk through those dark valleys to be able to get to the peak at the peak of the mountain.
Yeah. What is it that Paul says in Romans 5 about suffering and character? I'll find it and I'll edit it in as if I never even had to Google it and I just knew it right off the top of my head. It'll be.
And James chapter 1, he talks about faith under trials and how persevering it leads to growth. You know, it's almost like the recipe or the formula for growth, that when you are challenged, you know, it's not a dead end. It's not God's disfavoring you. It's actually an opportunity, kind of like what Scott was saying. So yeah, sometimes this is a corny cliche preacherism, but you know, you go through what you grow through. Other way around, you grow through what you go through. That's what it is. Yes.
Oh yeah, and you definitely got that from your grandfather, didn't you?
I don't know, somebody, or you know, God never wastes a hurt. That's another one. But
this is good. Here it is, Romans 5:3-5. Not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character. And character, hope. Ah, there we go, right to Rick's answer. And hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit, who has been given to us. Yeah, so our sufferings lead to hope. I love that. Excellent. Hmm. And I'll have to check out that example from James as well. So hopefully this can be at least a little bit practical as well, because we'll wax poetic about theology and Star Wars, but we want this to be helpful as well. Now, finally, as we think about this, where would a person want to go if they wanted to go deeper in this topic? Biblically, I recommended Job, talk about the story of the prodigal son, Luke 15. Where else in the Bible? Where else in the galaxy far, far away? I mentioned Knights of the Old Republic 2 earlier in the episode. Rick mentioned Jedi Fallen Order. He explained Jedi Fallen Order a little bit more than I did. Knights of the Old Republic 2, the main character, the Exile, had participated in the destruction of the planet Malachor 5, which you might know the name Malachor from Rebels in Legends. It was a planet that this Jedi army basically destroyed with this super weapon, the Mass Shadow Generator. But then the General, who's your main playable character, was cut off from the Force by the Jedi Order. They performed this great Force technique to sever the character from the Force. And then throughout the game, the Exile is rediscovering his or her connection to the Force. And it's always your decision if you're going to go light side or dark side. I think the light side answer is canonical in this fictional, non-canonical universe. But it's still, there's a spiritual element in the story that is really beautiful in terms of rediscovering a person's purpose and belief as well. Did you find yours, Rick?
Yeah. So there are two passages that this Christianity Today article that I mentioned earlier brought up. One is Psalm 27:14. These are short passages, just kind of meditate or reflect on. But this verse says, "Wait for the Lord, be strong, and let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord." So yeah, that's definitely one to chew on. And we talked about kind of how we don't. I don't know if we said this as explicitly, but sometimes there's not a quick overnight solution for this. You know, sometimes these feelings don't go away just from listening to a podcast or reading a book, and so you have to work through it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good one to meditate on. Another one over in Hebrews, verses 36 through 38.
What chapter?
Hebrews 10. Great question. Hebrews. Let me try that again. So this is coming from Hebrews chapter 10, verses 36 through 38. "For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. For yet a little while, and the coming one will come and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him."
Oh, beautiful. Absolutely. Yeah, there's an element in all of this to draw near to God, and God will draw near to you. There's an element in this about waiting and being patient, because God's timing isn't always the same as ours, and I'm grateful that we've gotten to this place. Well, that does it for this week. It's been a great great topic, Rick. Challenging. Woo! Challenging. I'm going to need to give my brain a rest and watch some TV after this or something, but maybe I'll pray first. This seems like maybe a more spiritual thing to do. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Hyperspace Theology. Be sure to check out our buddy Kevin's other project, Faith in the Folds. I recently guested on one episode, listened to some of the others. The interview with Jim Martin was especially good, will be relevant for maybe somebody like Rick or me, who's starting out in ministry and is hitting some brick walls and needs a little bit of encouragement along the way. Dr. Martin did a great job on that episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us at hyperspace_theology on Instagram, where you can see our beautiful faces, but also can, you know, talk to us, leave comments and messages. You can even email us at hyperspacetheology@gmail.com. If you have any questions about God, Star Wars, or anything in between, even if you are going through something difficult and would like someone to talk to, please feel free to reach out. We would love to hear from you. We'd even like to do a listener feedback episode. Give us your best opinions on the Bible and spirituality. Ask us your toughest questions. Nothing is off limits, and you might just make it on the show. We'll be back, everybody, in 2 weeks with another episode. In the meantime, God bless, and may the Force be with you.